Who are you?
Tim Callender.
Summer Brooks.
Brett Filipek.
We host the Babylon podcast.
What do you want?
To study and discuss the Babylon 5 universe.
Where are you going?
To discover every scrap of B5 memorabilia.
Who do you serve, and who do you trust?
And welcome back to another Babylon podcast. I am Summer Brooks.
I am Tim Callender.
I think Tim is sleeping. I am Brett Filipek.
Tim is otherwise engaged and is apologetic for that. This is my night of apologies.
That's okay.
The night of 1,000 apologies?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, you've got two down. Just got, you know, another 998 more to go.
I am also apologizing because I don't know. While I root for the Diamondbacks, the Phillies are still close to my heart, and the Phillies just went up 4-2 in the bottom of the seventh on a long fly ball to center field that bounced around and got away from the center fielder.
It does that.
Indeed.
One day, someday in my life, I would like to call a baseball game. Just saying. Anyway.
What would you call it? I mean, besides a baseball game.
Fred.
Yeah. Come on, man. You know how fun it is to sit there and go, 3-2 pitch to Maurer, and it's a long fly ball deep left center field. Oh, he's got it. He pulled it back from over the fence.
But see, I think what you should do is really, you should call the game, but call it as a soccer game. And really confuse people, you know, and sit there and say, you know, it's passed to the fullback, out to the halfback, you know, the goal, do that thing, right? And really just confuse people.
And you know what's funny?
Walk.
And you know what's funny? I could actually do that.
Should. All right. So what are we doing tonight here, folks?
Do we have
any news? Because I've been hearing rumors of news.
We have news. I think we have a plan. Oh. One of our plan is to talk about one of the unproduced Crusade scripts, but I hopped on Twitter mere moments before starting this recording to let people know that, hey, we're recording tonight, and I see all these people losing their collective rabbit minds because sometime this morning, Walter Koenig announced that J. Michael Straczynski is in negotiations to reacquire the rights to B5.
Ooh, yes.
That's the news you got? Okay,
Adam,
yeah, because
you're 13 about that. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw a tweet from B5 News. I saw a tweet from Trek Movie. Okay, so this spread like, you know, double wildfire through the B5 and the Star Trek communities. Apparently, because he also said something that he compared Bester to Chekhov. And so I actually want to go read that article, but just seeing the fact that Straczynski negotiating reacquire rights, I started happy dancing right there.
Yeah, here's what this is. I'm looking at the TrekMovie.com story right now, and Koenig was at a Star Trek convention at the Las Vegas Star Trek convention last weekend, and this is the quote that they have here. Koenig says, he told me, and that would be JMS, that he is in negotiations. Well, actually, it says here in negations, so I don't know if that's a typo or what. He told me that he is in negations to reacquire the rights to Babylon 5, and it looks pretty good. Now, what that portends, I am not entirely sure. It could be a new series or it could be a feature film, but he was quite animated about it. He seemed very excited, and Warner Brothers is dealing with him in good faith. So you might see another Babylon 5 in the not-too-distant future. In the not-too-distant future, next Sunday AD, to borrow from another.
And you know what would be cool?
Yeah, if Crow and Tom Servo were making comments.
No, if that rights acquisition included cool things like, graphic novels and novels.
You know, it's hard to say. The rest of this here, the article here is just sort of a recap of Straczynski's B5 since the project and what he's been doing, you know, in like two sentences worth. And of course, Koenig talking about how much he enjoyed playing Bester.
Well, I'm sure it's going to be an arduous and interesting process, because we've learned over the years just how, eccentric dealing with Warner Brothers can be.
Yeah, it seems to me that would be a full-time job right there. You know, never mind trying to write all the comics and screenplays and blah, 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 blah. It's like, I don't know. Here's the thing about it is that I'm tired of being teased, and yet my blood trembles with anticipation.
Like I said, this is
horrible.
This is different from other teases, because there's a difference between pitching a new B5 project to Warner Brothers and negotiating to buy your shit back.
True. Very true. Hopefully more news comes out shortly, because really, I don't think I can handle the anticipation.
You know, I'm good with him waiting and giving all of us one juicy, sloppy, wet kiss of a Christmas present.
Well,
that's a disturbing mental image. <I'm sorry.
laughs> Yeah. Now here's the next question, though, on top of this, though, is did Koenig spill the beans, or was he given the go-ahead by JMS to say something?
Interesting. Well,
I mean, everything is obviously speculation, but you have to wonder.
I don't know. I mean, I think everything we know about Straczynski, I don't think he would just let something leak out without, he wouldn't let something like this just leak out. I think he had to be authorized, or it might given the okay in some form or fashion to sit there and talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, that's just my thing. And the other thing too is, if it weren't true, he'd usually be pretty quick to sit there and shoot it down.
That's true.
That's the other thing with him, right? Is he's as active on the interwebs as most of us are, and he'd be pretty quick with that if it weren't true.
Hey guys, I just got off the phone with Straczynski's lawyers. He said that this show is over. You're done now.
Yeah.
That's not funny.
Now here's the question, Mike. Did they say goodbye? Because they said goodbye, then they're bad guys.
That's right. Otherwise, if they just hung up, then it's
then okay. We have to listen to them because they're good guys. Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
That's very. So. I was watching a total tangent, but I was watching Die Hard 2, and he did that in the movie. John McClane, you know, Bruce Willis did that in the movie, and I'm like, God, man, you know, he's a good guy. He must be the good guy. He just hung up on somebody without saying goodbye. I mean,
no, they actually just they actually say goodbye in three different languages. So,
gotcha. Okay, well, I can't wait for more news on this one, guys. That's all I can say. Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd have to disagree with you. I'm thinking yippee-ki-yay counts as a goodbye.
That's more of a send-off. Goodbye.
Okay. We can. All right. We can do that one.
Yeah. You know, so anyway. All right. Well. Cool. Good news. Keep us. Hopefully, Twitterverse keeps us all in, or whoever keeps us all in the loop.
Yes.
Fantastic. All right, so we're talking unproduced scripts tonight, huh?
Yes.
I better get reading. So you guys talk amongst yourselves, and by the time this show's over, I'll actually be ready to contribute.
Okay.
Be awesome. This should end well for me.
Oh, you have to love flying by the seat of your pants, production and recording, because it makes for such unpredictable yet amusing entertainment. All right.
And it is the nature of our lives right now.
Totally.
Oh, yeah. No idea. All right. In that case, we will take a really quick break, and I will check the score of the Phillies Diamondbacks game, and we'll be back in a second.
The quill is the most powerful of all tools. Not as blunt as a workman's hammer, nor as precise as a watchmaker's screwdriver. But when dipped in ink and applied to a blank page of a leather-bound book, the infinite power of human imagination is revealed. Whole worlds are created from a single idea. With a quill, all worlds are possible. From the library known as The Quillian Chronicles.
Please check out thequillians.com.
To the ends of the earth.
Yes.
Indeed.
In which we get to see the true nature of Matthew Gideon's Ahab obsession.
I'm on page 8 of the script, and I'd say so far that's a pretty accurate description. He's full on Captain Ahab.
This is the white whale episode. I had not, before reading this particular episode, I don't think I had realized the depths of his obsession with finding that ship.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that somehow he knows it goes beyond simply the revenge for his fallen crewmates. You know, that whatever this thing is about isn't just simply this evil, bad thing that's killed everyone he knows and loves.
Mm-hmm. Because we don't, there's never been any reason why that ship, why at that moment in time.
Right. Because there's a lot of confluence of events there. The Technomages are fleeing. This mysterious shadow tech hybrid ship shows up. And just by coincidence, a young Matthew Gideon is sent outside to do repairs and gets kind of, left behind.
Mm-hmm. The one question I had, when we saw the ship that attacked the Cerberus, it did not look like a hybrid. It looked like a full-on shadow battle crab.
Well, yes and no. I mean, we're dealing with... There are two things here. One is, as fans, B5 fans, we recognize what a shadow battle crab is. Okay? We also have been given a view of what we think of as the shadow hybrid ships, which is the Earth Force heavy destroyers with the black tentacle things coming off the front of it. But given the B5 universe gap in time there of somewhere in, what are we saying, like 10 years roughly?
Probably closer to 15.
Right. Who knows really what a hybrid ship is going to look like? I think without going into more spoilers, I think that's something we find out about in a future unproduced script.
unless the hybrid looks so close to a full battle crab. Now, if the battle crab we had actually seen in the flashback to the Cerberus attack looked off, I would give this a total pass. But it didn't. It looked like the same type of battle crab that we saw take out the Narn ships.
Right.
And what was that?
Well, any given episode.
Yeah. Any given episode, yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking the early ones where
Blog Twilight.
Where Lando first said all he said was I just have to pick a target.
Pick a target, yeah. That would have been Chrysalis. wasn't it?
Nah, it was earlier than that. Okay. Well,
anyway,
I don't know.
Science
it could have.
Actually,
It could have been. I mean, it looked like one of those. What we were shown. Mm-hmm. Now, were we being given the view of the unreliable narrator? That doesn't seem to hold because we have no proof that Gideon's memory is faulty, especially since he's so obsessed on what it looks like. I wish we had had a chance to see this episode because I want to hear the signal that he heard. Is it the same scream? Yes. Is it the same scream that Lita used to hear? Is it a modification of that one? Because right. You remember all those times whenever Lita was near Shadow Tech, she would hear that scream, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Describing
or
it,
is it... Sorry, you go ahead. I'm...
Yeah. The fact that they reused, it looked like something out of a nightmare, which was exactly what Kiefer described it as when he saw it. And what drove his obsession to go find it, to figure out what it was. All right.
Well, here's a line here.
I can't see a hybrid invoking that same sort of primal, primitive fear.
Right. I understand that. And here's a line that I'm kind of scanning through here, where they're looking at the shadow hybrid after they fight it in an asteroid field.
Mm-hmm.
And Matheson asks, that's really, it's sort of the same one. And Gideon says, the same one or a modified version. It looks like there have been a few changes since it killed the Cerebus.
Mm.
So, yeah. So who knows?
Okay.
I mean, this is one of the problems with dealing with an unproduced script is we don't have the visuals that would accompany this kind of thing.
Very true. Very true. But in my mind's eye, you know, I can make it up. That's the best part about reading, right? I can make it up, and so it all makes sense to me. I hereby declare it was a shadow crab vessel. There you go. See how that works.
I'm digging through here. Eilerson's has a data crystal that has a distant shot of a shadow vessel and the shadow hybrid side by side.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, as you can see, there's a definite resemblance. So I think maybe what we're dealing with is that we didn't get as good a look at the hybrid as we thought we did.
True. No, I'd be willing to go with that. And the fact that Eilerson had pictures, because we know IPX has played with this technology before.
Yes.
The fact that I wonder how familiar he is with what was found on Mars. Or
I have a feeling, I have a feeling probably something in passing, but not to the level that of involvement. Because whatever else you say about Max, there is a certain moral center to him. And I don't know that despite some of the way he tries to carry himself, I think if he was involved in something like that, that would...
No. I don't think he would have been involved, but just because I would assume that he would have high-level access to a lot of information on stuff IPX was playing with, he might have known that that was a project or somebody was researching into this thing. He might not know details or some of the details of somebody who was hands-on. But I would have to assume that he would have been provided with, hey, if you ever run across one of these, let us know.
That could be. On the other hand, it could also be a black ops project similar to what Earth Force is going on, and they might look at Eilerson as the kind of guy that wouldn't be able to keep his mouth shut. And so don't have this guy looking for this stuff because, you know, he's not the kind of person who, you know, he's like a 10-year-old child, you know, or better yet, a 5-year-old. I know what you're getting for your birthday, you know, and doesn't recognize that he's spilling the beans. So I can see where they might want to keep Eilerson out of the loop, or at least, you know, that there's a closed ops that very few people, you know, need to know kind of thing mm-hmm. in IPX. You know, okay. and given some of the stuff that we know about from Crusade and some things we read in a future script, I don't think that's beyond the possibility. And it makes me wonder whether or not we would have run into that had Crusade gone into a second or third year.
Mm-hmm. And I really am curious what type of ship the Shadow Technology was crossed with. Because when we saw the Warlock, there were Warlock class ships, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. At season 4.
Yep.
Those looked a lot like those weird vehicles you see on the street every now and then, where somebody takes the back of a Gran Torino and slams it on the front, the front end of a VW Bug. It's like, I got a front half of this that works. I got the back half of this that works. Let's make something happen.
Yeah, right. We got to get there.
The Warlock class cruisers that Ivanova took the fleet up against looked a little rough around the edges.
Right. And, you know, again, given that we've got some years between,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's the possibility that they grew that. Well, we should also give people kind of a sense of the structure of the story, because I think that this is important here. As you've gathered from our conversation, Gideon gets a bead on the ship that he believes destroyed the Cerberus. What's creepy about this is that he gets the information from the Apocalypse box. And the Apocalypse box gives Gideon coordinates of where this thing has reappeared, mm-hmm. Destroying an alien vessel.
Mm-hmm.
Gideon, knowing that he is basically about to go AWOL, he brings Chambers and Eilerson and Galen and Matheson together and says, okay, look, I want this thing, but I also – it's like he knows he's about to go Ahab. And gives the people around him the opportunity to say,
which I thought was a brilliant thing for him to do, by the way.
Yeah, right. Exactly. It's like, okay, you know, here's the thing. I want to go after this, and once I make the decision to do this, there's no turning back. But I'm also not going to drag people along. You know, you guys have to be in. You know, in for a penny, in for a pound, kind of thing.
See, is that the way you took that? Because I took that more of a, hey, I need a check and balance to this, because I'm about to sit there and I'm about to do something and I may not be acting very rationally right now, and I need you guys to be the voice of reason. Here's my logic for doing this.
No, you're right. Yeah. No, you're right. Yeah. Yeah.
That's kind of the way I read it when I read it.
Yeah. No, going back over it. Yes, that's, you're right. That is a better take on the thing.
So you don't see it more of a, I know I'm on the crazy train. I'm riding this crazy train all the way to the end of the line. You have a chance now to jump off before we get going too fast.
Well, no, yes. I think Brett's got the better interpretation, because it's not I'm taking the ship. Here's your chance to get off the train. It's, if I'm going to take the ship, I need to know that you guys are with me. And if you guys aren't with me, then we're not going. What's interesting is that Chambers is the one who initially casts the no vote, and that's how Gideon sets it up. It's like, I want a unanimous vote from the four of you. And when Chambers says no, all right, Doreen is in here on this one. I'm sorry, I'm going back through it, not Matheson. Chambers says that she's the one who votes no because, you know, she understands, like Eilerson says, I understand revenge. Eilerson says, yeah, go get it. You know, get it, have closure, be done with it. Chamber says, no, you know, I understand your grief and I understand the idea of revenge. But she says, I have an obligation to the lives at risk here and now. And she says, we have to leave the past where it is and concentrate on the present. So when they finally arrive at the place where the Apocalypse box says that this alien ship is, and they find all the dead bodies, then Chambers says, okay, well, yeah, this is the here and the now, and we need to go get this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, yeah. I can see that.
I will say the whole micro jump thing he's done in this, I thought was kind of smart, right?
Yeah.
Way of doing that, but and of course, I'm literally reading this as you guys are talking. One of the things I thought was interesting, though, it describes the fact that it's taken its toll on the ship and the engines and the power source and all that stuff. Yet, when they do finally catch up with these guys, right, mm-hmm. they're expected to go into battle.
Yes.
With a ship that's got engines that can't really jump and yep. with power that you've really kind of bled yourself dry on.
Yep.
I mean,
and a crew that's already starting to get a little edgy.
Yeah.
A little bit.
And so as I'm reading this, I'm like, that almost that borders on. I mean, it is obsession, and we know he's obsessed with this whole thing. But that's obsession to the point of just not even rationality. I mean, because you've put yourself in a position where even if you do catch him, you're more likely to get your hiney kicked than do hiney kicking because of what it took to get there.
Right.
And so which point? Yeah, great. You proved your point. Woohoo! I'll show everybody on Earth that you were right 9 years ago. Hopefully you're still alive to tell them because you have nothing left to throw at them besides rocks.
Well, and it's interesting you say that because they chase the alien vessel into, they have a fight with it. The Excalibur basically powers its way through the alien fighter phalanx, yep. takes damage, and they pursue it, damaging the ship into an asteroid field. Mm-hmm. And it goes on silent running, and so Excalibur goes on silent running. And when the alien fires a thruster to avoid a particularly large rock, then the Excalibur turns on it, and the alien commits Harry Carey and self destructs.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of the only thing that saves the Excalibur at that point is the fact that it's got giant rocks blocking the way.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that was in there that was interesting that you said about what you get your hiney kicked is there's a great conversation in there with Gideon and Galen, where Gideon's all by himself in the wardroom, and typically, he's all by himself, and the script says the camera kind of circles around, and when it comes back around, there's Galen, back to back with Gideon, also with a cup of coffee, and they just kind of start talking about, what's the whole point of this, and Galen makes mention that, he understands what, Gideon wants to do here, but he says, I'm worried to how you found out where this ship is.
The conversation is, let's see. You went to bed, you got up at 7, and at 7:30 you have this information. Where'd you get it?
Yeah,
come
right.
on, tell me. I know yeah. you can trust me. Where'd you get it?
Yeah.
I just and find this out.
Right. And he says, basically, I'm worried that you use something that's beyond your power, and I'm worried that something beyond your power is using you. And it kind of gives Gideon the opportunity to confess, and Gideon still won't give up on that.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing that was in there was where Galen is saying is, Gideon's asking, he's kind of wondering if I'm doing the right thing, and Galen says, if we survive, then we did the right thing. If we don't, well, at least we won't have to put up with anyone saying we told them so. right, which is perfect Galen, but Gideon says, what this means to me? You were there. Someone has to speak for the dead. And I love this about Galen because this is something that I've always wondered in my own wanderings through life. Galen says, pity no one ever asked the dead what they would want to have said on their behalf. It might sound like honor us by staying alive so at least one living person might remember us.
Right.
That's exactly right. We're all so eager to speak for the dead, but do we really know what they want? And that's kind of what Galen's saying here. It's like maybe the dead would be saying, "Don't be doing this."
Mm-hmm.
But
the one part that actually there were two parts that really struck me, sort of in the middle there, where they come where they're chasing the trail of the hybrid ship and they run across the other ship that it destroyed.
Yeah.
And when they announce that not only did they destroy this ship, they picked off all the life pods, the escape pods, to make sure that there were no witnesses.
Right.
The reaction, you know, Dr. Chambers goes from, we really shouldn't be doing this, to hunt those suckers down. that was very telling.
Maybe
it was just the doctor's reaction to, wait, these people were in escape pods and you picked them off?
Yeah.
That's low.
That is low. Was I the only one who, in reading this whole thing, when they got the asteroid field, thought that I just finally saw the confluence of Star Wars and Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan?
Kinda.
Yeah.
Actually, when I got to the asteroid field, the first two things that popped into my head were. What was it? That Star Trek, that Next Gen episode with the Pegasus when they found the Pegasus and Galaxy Quest. There's one thing you didn't know. My ship is dragging mines.
Right.
It was that Pegasus episode and Galaxy Quest and Dancing with Asteroids. That should be a cliche. That should be added into the list of science fiction movie cliches during battle in an asteroid field.
Right, because let's face it, like an asteroid field that, you know, the asteroid belt around our solar system, they're not clustered together so heavily like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But
they're rocks. They are large rocks that have been in space for millions of years. They have survived the whims of gravity, passing other gravitational forces. They're bigger than you, they're heavier than you, and they don't care what they bounce off of. You will not win.
Right. so the other interesting thing that plays into here is there's an exchange between Galen and Darina at the end after they've fought the hybrid ship. The hybrid ship has self-destructed and the Excalibur has sent out salvage teams to try to see what they can save, which really is next to nothing. So Darina is talking to Galen and notes that he didn't get directly involved in the battle, and Galen says it wouldn't have been appropriate. And Darina says, you know, well, you didn't fight it, but you didn't leave. If we'd been destroyed, you'd have died with him. And Galen says, we are entwined. It is our path. Darina says, great, so where do I fit in? And he says, squarely in the middle of the fire. Which, wow, that really makes me wonder. And then there is a scene toward the end where Galen is conversing with another technomage.
Yes, that whole scene.
Yeah, and where this technomage is named Dirk and asks, are you sure it was Shadow Tech? And Galen says, positive. And Dirk says, it seems your choice to leave us was correct after all. Does the captain know of our involvement? Galen says, no, not yet, but he will in time.
Mm-hmm. There are some cryptic elements to that conversation. All right, let's backtrack a little bit.
Yeah.
Galen, during the course of this episode, asks Matheson where Gideon got this information from.
Right.
And we are led to believe that Matheson...
Script, yes.
Yeah, that Matheson may know the box exists, but not know its full nature.
Right.
So that, you know, he might have gleaned that telepathically. We don't know. We don't know.
Right.
And Galen...
Matheson is aware that the captain is getting his information from something.
Right. And Galen is intrigued by Matheson's silence about where he got the information.
Especially the silence of an honest man. Oh, I love that
one. That was a great line.
Great, great line. Yeah. But the first time I did a quick read and then a reread of some of the important parts of the script. When I first read that conversation between Galen and Dirk, I thought he was talking about the box.
Really?
Yeah. Because they didn't specifically say the ship. Now, maybe I missed a description in there, but literally the first time I read that part, the way it was written, I thought Galen suspected that whatever Gideon was getting his information from had ties to Shadow Technology.
Wow, and I didn't read it that way at all.
I just went, huh, what? And then when I read it again, I realized that he was reporting on what he read on the ship. But I'm like, there had to have been something else in there to make my mind go to Galen suspecting the box of being Shadow Tech or something else. So I'm like, wait, where did that come from? And the second point I had, Matheson's confrontation with the nav officer.
Oh my!
I want to see that on that.
Right,
dude.
The description of that was phenomenal,
dude. Yes. Him being nose to nose to somebody, talking so low that nobody but him can hear it, and dressing him down. And the description the guy says that was like, what did he say to you? I no, whatever.
I'd rather face what's out there
than face
what's behind me. Right, what's standing behind me.
Right. That was awesome. Yes.
That was magnificent. I'm like, dude, that shows a side of Matheson we hadn't really fully seen yet.
Yes. Right. Exactly. That's exactly right. I love Matheson. I think he's one of the most like Gideon's or Galen's comment there. You know, the silence of an honest man. That's one of the things that to me is really intriguing about Matheson's character is that I don't want to say he's the innocent abroad because, you know, if you're the first officer of a ship, you have to do things like dress somebody down and you've got to be rude and explicit. And I'm not talking about using curse words, but he probably made it very plain that, you know, he was going to be tossed out naked on an airlock or whatever, right, you know, whatever right. it is, but, you know, not, you know, you're going to take me seriously and here's what it is. So that's not somebody who is naive, but
no, he's second in command. He has to be able to make those hard decisions because if something happens to the captain, everybody's going to be looking to him to take over the leadership and keep them safe.
Right. But by the same token, he's now entering some very slippery situations. He'll follow Gideon to hell and back to fight this thing. There's no doubt. But you also get that sense, like, the reason he doesn't tell Gideon out or Galen outright how the captain knows the information is because somewhere down inside he knows that Gideon is messing with things that man was not meant to know. And I would love to see how that kind of thing gets played out over the series.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we kind of see that in the next one we'll talk about with value judgments, but I won't say anything more about that. But it's that kind of thing is there. That to me is why Matheson is so interesting. You know, Darina, you know she's a good guy, but she has no, you know, she's the typical thief from Dungeons and Dragons. She has no compunction about breaking into a place because it's just a puzzle. You know, that's not good or bad. It's just, okay, somebody locked this because they want to keep someone out. Let's find out what. You know, that's I don't want to say it's a dishonest thing, but it's, you know, that's not somebody who honors the desire of the locker, if you will. Matheson wouldn't do that unless he knew there was something bigger at stake or that, you know, as we've seen before, we come up on an ancient alien ruins and there is nobody there who's going to get pissed off if we go poking around. Anyways, this script gives you some of that insight into Matheson's character.
So, couple things as I'm on page 32 of 34 while you guys are talking. That's if you're wondering why I'm so darn quiet. End of act 4, What did you think? What did you think about the silver half a dollar floating in space?
I'm thinking that would have been changed in production.
Why?
Because obviously the intent is to let the viewer know that this isn't an alien ship; it comes from Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I would expect to finally, at the end of the day, see some relic that indicates Earth force. Whether you would have, I could see it this kind of thing.
Why like Earth have, force? Why military?
Because we... Okay, spoiler alert. Because ultimately, that's who is behind this, at this point anyways. And the whole point to using a relic like a silver dollar is to say, this is from a human culture.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason why I would think it would be changed is because of all things to have, a Kennedy half dollar, that really strains believability in my mind and is actually, I know it's going to sound strange to say it, having like an Earth Force pin float by, it is an obvious clue, but so is the half dollar, but it ties it into the universe. It says this is part of the universe. You're too stupid to know that this is coming from Earth, so we got to have something that's from, like, you can find this in your pocket, dude.
Are you trying to beat you over the head with it?
Yes, right, exactly.
No.
Go ahead.
Okay, let's hear this.
First of all, we have no solid proof that this is military. This could be, you know, who knows? What do you mean at this point in time? We don't know that this is military related. It could be a fringe group. How many black ops did Eggers have his fingers in? Come on.
We know that
some of the other people who have their power bases on Mars were also as rich as Eggers or richer, because Eggers was what? The fifth largest. There were people who had more money than him. Aspirations, goals, visions, agendas, what have you. So
sure. And power and money are a dangerous combination. Get it.
You got it, man. So we don't have concrete proof that it was Earth force. All right. Having it be a silver dollar or an easily identifiable Earth coin to me makes sense. A lucky piece handed down from somebody's family, you know. What was the reason for Garibaldi carrying great grandmother's 38? Come on.
Because it was a plot point so they could shoot the dumb monster. That's one of the reasons why. that's one of the reasons why I am not happy with that bit either.
But don't you think somebody, you know, some guy on a ship, you know, mid-level officer, command-level officer, had a lucky piece in his quarters,
in his pocket.
Yeah, why not? It's a coin. All right? It's a coin. It's not worth anything legal tender. It's easy to carry around in his pocket or leave on his desk. You know, some are like saying Earth. I appreciate that there was an artifact saying Earth. Did it strain my believability that it was a specific coin?
But by that logic, then I'd rather have seen like a pack of rubbers go by.
First of all, it had to be metallic because it survived the explosion. Remember, the line that was in there, there's not much out there that's larger than an inch across. Hence, a coin.
Okay, all right.
All right. And a coin would be easy to
look. I'm not talking about the whole package.
And how do you know what a package of rubbers looks like in the year 2270? Come on.
So not touching this. So we're going to let this go. I'm going to close my eyes and pretend this conversation did not happen.
What I'm saying is I don't have a problem with it being a coin from old Earth. From Earth that was, however you want to call it.
Yeah, I'm not too keen on it. That was the one bit here that left me cold. What do you think, Brett? What's your take on it?
It didn't leave me cold, but it was a beat you had over the head moment, right? That's really what it was to me. I'm like, okay, what they're really trying to tell you is that there was some level of human involvement. Whether I don't care who it was, whether it was Earth Force or Psycor or you know my aunt Gertrude, they were trying to give you that there was a human connection to this. And my thought was, given the fact that we know that there were human pilots to Shadow ships, I didn't find it to be that much. That was like not a big reveal to me, honestly. I was like, huh, okay. So you're saying that humans are still somehow involved with Shadow technology? Well, there's a shocker. You know, I mean,
right? And it's kind of implied throughout. Well, even in the episodes that were produced.
Yeah.
You know, in the Path of Sorrows. That's kind of the implication when Gideon is getting his debriefing. You know, you're not to talk about this with anyone.
Yeah.
It's like, well, why would they tell him that if there's somebody on, quote unquote, our side wasn't involved? So, yeah, I agree with you. That's why to me, having a reveal of an Earth Force badge becomes that much more... To the point, becomes much more,
given,
more of a kidney punch.
Well, no, given what we know of what TNT wanted to divorce Crusade from the Babylon 5 universe, how do we know that anybody watching would even recognize an Earth Alliance pin?
Because what you do is you do a dissolve cut as the badge floats up to the camera in space. You do a dissolve. That's a close-up of an Earth Force badge on somebody's uniform, and then you pull back to reveal, you know, text doing whatever, and then the character walks into camera and blah, blah, blah.
There's a few ways you could have done that. The other thing where they sat there and said, you know, Gideon says, you know, three things here worry me, that one, this may not have been the ship that, you know, I was looking for. Two, right. There's other ships like this out there. You know, and I remember what the third one was. But that, and combine that with the fact that they, when they get to that planet and they're looking and they say, you know, hey, have you seen an impact like this before? Yeah, it looks like something that the Excalibur would do. You know,
right.
I mean, again, it's one of those things. It's like, if you're just trying to beat me over the head with this, okay, you got it with the coin. You didn't have to keep beating me over the head. I can right. Make the connection myself.
Right, and at that point, don't do the coin because you're already drawing those connections elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, and that Gideon suspects these things. That's enough for me. I don't need the visual of yep. You know, of something as anachronistic as a Kennedy half dollar.
Yeah, I agree. So I mean, it was like I saw it. I was like, okay, I see what they're trying to do. But then as I kept going, I'm like, really, you're you know. Quit beating me over the head with it, you know. So, anyways, but having finished the whole script while you guys were jibber jabbering, I would have liked. I will say this: I would have liked to have seen this because, I like the whole Ahab approach to these things. I liked Moby Dick. I liked Star Trek: First Contact for that same reason. Yep. I would have liked this episode, I think, for that same reason. When you see somebody who's got that deep of a connection, that much of an obsession, I would have liked to have seen how Gideon would have acted, because you know he's in other episodes. He has his times where he's, you know, pretty serious. He has his other times where he's pretty lighthearted. This was a mostly not lighthearted episode for him,
right.
And it would have been good to sit there and see that side of him a little more on screen.
Yeah. And
one of the things that I like about it is that it was very much a straightforward episode, you know, other than obviously the subtext of who's behind the ship. There's not a whole lot of, you know, direction, if you will. Like, you think it's one thing and it turns out to be another.
Oh, no.
The Long Road is a good example. Oh, well, is this, who's really the bad guy here? No, you know who the bad guy is.
Yeah.
And I like that it was that direct. Yeah.
And the one last reveal that I thought was interesting was the flyover Gideon and Matheson had over the planet they backtracked the ship to. And the hint that the bad guys may have their own Excalibur.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I looked at that. I'm like, okay. I mean, again, you're beating me over the head. Or it could be they just have their own really big gun.
Yes.
It could be any one of a number of conclusions, you know. But I think more for me, if we cut out the, as you said, that subtext that wasn't really honestly all that subtle there at the end. I did like the whole. Damn the torpedoes! We're going into this, thing, hellbent for leather, and I liked that aspect of Gideon. I thought it was good to see for him as a character, because honestly, it had been kind of missing for me in other episodes. I mean, you could see him be kind of serious sometimes, and get up in people's business, but nothing so personal as I think this was, obviously, because of what it meant to him. And I thought that was pretty cool to see. Same type of thing where, in Star Trek, the original series and Balance of Terror, where Kirk was so obsessed with hunting down the Romulan ship that he was willing to sit there and throw it all to the side if he had to. Same type of thing. I just like seeing that in your captain, right, where they're not perfect. And they've got demons, and this was his demon, and I just like that aspect of the character. I really wish they could have produced it.
Yeah. Any other thoughts, Tim?
Yeah, one last thought. This episode opens with Gideon giving the command to Matheson that there is to be an accident in the laundry room with the gray uniforms.
Oh, yes! Yes.
But won't they
and that's
the
all we get about it.
Yeah. Okay. Won't they check the logs and see if there weren't? Oh, there will be.
There will be. I'm sure. I'll make sure of it.
That's the line that's the great. Oh, there will be.
It's about as good as seeing the teddy bear floating in outer space from Sheridan, right?
Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
Right. What was that, Delta leader? Nope. Not on a bed.
Yep. Right. All right, I think we've bludgeoned this one, guys.
All right, well, let's take a really quick break and come back and wrap up.
Optimal health is more than eating right.
You figure out, okay, here's what I'm allowing myself, calories, carbs, protein, and you spread it out. That way your body can actually absorb the nutrition properly, mm-hmm. and it can work in your favor because it's going to help you prevent muscle loss.
Good nutrition and the right exercise are the things that affect us all.
Yes, let's talk about back fat today. In fact, we could just title this episode Back Fat.
Join Romy Nelson, Ingredients for Life.
Visit RomyNelson.com.
Oh, and we're back.
Yep.
I have one bit of other Twitter found news from earlier this week.
Okay.
You can check the Babylon Podcast Twitter feed to see the link to it, or I can actually post it on the website. Someone out there, creative and uploading, has created John and Delenn My Little Ponies.
Oh, no.
That's disturbing.
The picture is so precious.
Oh, I thought we had to get through B5 babies first.
No, apparently they went My Little Pony first.
Oh, that's just not right.
Yeah, that's so wrong on so many levels.
I'm actually going to sign off now because I'm going to go hurl if anybody's looking for me.
It's like I feel the same way you do about My Little Ponies, but it was just one of those things where you had to laugh. Because if I remember correctly, the Sheridan pony is wearing something that resembles an Army of Light uniform. And the Delenn pony has flowing locks.
Yeah, headbone?
Well, no, I don't remember. I remember. But it's very obvious that it's John and Delenn, and they're whoever took the picture posed them so that they're like knuckling each other nose to nose in a very affectionate sort of way. Aww. And I just went, all right, as much as I don't like My Little Ponies or Care Bears, that's kind of funny.
In its own disturbing way.
Yes.
I have one quick email here to share, and this is actually for Summer.
Oh.
This comes to us from Nan. She says, Summer, thank you. You are the first person in many discussions of 3D technology to acknowledge that some of us just can't see them in 3D. Hmm? I appreciate the recognition.
No problem. Because a very, very good friend of mine is red-green colorblind, which made for interesting games of Uno, let me tell you.
I bet.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. And I don't know. Somebody told me that the red-green colorblindness happens 99% of the time in men, and more people are actually red-green colorblind then we'll admit it. And I'm like, wow, talk about a traffic safety problem just waiting to happen.
Oh, yeah, no kidding.
Well, that's why you also memorize the locations of the light as opposed to, no, say the red light, say the bottom light.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I don't know. Whatever.
Still, not safe. But, it's because Brian Brown over at Slice, his left eye, he has no sight, almost no sight in his left eye. So 3D is kind of a waste on him.
And that's the side you should attack from. So remember that, Brett.
I will remember that, actually. I will remember that. I will see him tomorrow at our regularly scheduled broadcast of the Slice of Sci-Fi, and I will make sure to practice my ninja skills coming at him from that side.
Why do you think he sits with his left side in the corner?
Smart. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, guys, I got nothing left. Anybody else got anything left?
Nope. I think we're all done here.
Yeah.
So, as always, come to the website, BabylonPodcast.com. Click the donate button. Help support us as we, I don't know, we're gonna have some changes coming up. I am still taking volunteers to do their own reviews of the novels and the graphic novels, comic books, whichever you happen to have your hands on. I'm coming up with an outline, a blueprint, so to speak, to keep you on point so that you don't talk about the same paragraph for 2.5 hours. Hopefully it'll work.
Leave that to Tim.
Exactly. Tim is the only person here who's allowed to ramble. The only one.
That's because you can't stop me.
That's true.
Can't stop me. No.
Yeah, so if you want to contribute to review any of the novels, any of the graphic novels, send us an email. That email address is babylonpodcast@gmail.com. We have a new video channel. All of the videos that Mike has recorded going way back to when Jeffrey was still part of the show, those are actually viewable now.
Jeffrey will always be part of the show.
He will be.
Like any good Vorlon.
Now it's like ingrained in posterity because we have video. That website is blip.tv/Babylon Podcast. You go see a whole lot of stuff, including the interviews we did with Tucker Smallwood and Pat Solomon and Carrie Dubrow and David Allen Brooks. Oh, yeah,
yeah.
Dave. Yeah. And as always, the voicemail line. Call in. Give us your feedback, your questions, your comments. And suggestions, even. You might not listen to them, but you can leave them. That number is 206 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
The year that... Oh, man, what happened to my half dollar?
And we'll see you next time on the other side of the asteroid belt.